Netflix presents Inside Jokes Space Force. I'm your host, Jimmy O. Yang. Let's give Skinny Fuel a try, and maybe we can shake hands from across the world. And let's go inside Space Force. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're talking about episode 107, Edison James, of Netflix's Space Force, written by Yael Greene and directed by Jeff Blitz. A heavily hyped entrepreneur offers the Les Space Force user revolutionary rocket fuel, while Dr. Chan gives Captain Ali a crash course in botany, and Aaron commits a crime.
When POTUS called me and asked me to help you guys out, I was stoked.
I was stoked as well, and amped.
Yeah, not just for our country, but my rocket fuel needs customers. And you'll have to forgive me if I sound like a woman on a mission, but I am one.
Our guest today, very awesome to have these two. We have our girl, Diana Silvers, who play Erin Naird in the show, and one of my favorites, Caitlin Olson. And later joining us in the episode will be our property master, Scott McGinnis. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. I just rewatched the episode. It's so much fun stuff. And when I saw you on the call sheet, Caitlin, I was so happy because I think one of my very first jobs was in season 8. Of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where I actually played my first scientist.
Yeah, that was so much fun. You were great.
Oh, thank you so much. How did you get involved in this project?
Well, I got a call from Greg Daniels asking me to do an episode of a show that he was doing with Steve Carell and John Malkovich. And I was like, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, no further questions need to be asked once you say Steve Carell and John Malkovich. Have you worked with those two before?
I had never met John. Steve and I had done like an event together, but we haven't done a project together. We did like, I think it's like some Shakespeare thing. But we know each other, you know, socially a little bit, but I had never worked with him before. So I was really excited. And then I read the script and that was that was really fun. So I was on board.
When Greg pitched it a character, was it based on anyone or what kind of backgrounds did he give you?
Yeah, so it was very Elizabeth Holmes, Silicon Valley, which I was so fascinated by when it was happening. And it's funny because I would walk around the house like doing her voice just because it would make Rob laugh. So when he was saying that it was sort of based on that character, I was like, oh my God, that's going to be so much fun. Yes. So I was excited.
This is kind of like one of those dream roles, one of those great guest star roles that can really have their own spin-off series. I love the whole episode. And Aaron Naird, one of my favorite characters in the show, Diana Silvers. You're so good in the show. Not just playing like a bratty teenager, but there's so much depth and layers to all of your performances. It's so great. How did you get involved in this project, Diana?
I went through many rounds of auditioning. I went through 3 rounds of auditions.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a good experience, though. It was like with each audition, I was one step closer to the job. First one was with Allison Jones when and I already, you know her because she cast Booksmart, and she's just fantastic. And her office is like down the street from where I live, where I live now. And I was with her and I said to her in the first round, if I just get a chemistry read with Steve Carell, I will be so happy. It doesn't even matter if I get the part. Like, it would just be a dream to just get to work in a room with him for 10 minutes. And I got that and more. I get to work with him in a room for 10 minutes all the time. Well, when we go back to work.
So was the second one with Steve, or was he like the final boss in the third?
He was the final. He's like the Bowser of it. Second round was with Greg and Paul, I think. No, just Greg and Howard, actually. And then third round was Greg, Howard, Steve, and Paul King.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you nervous at all?
Actually, not really. That's what was weird. I think it was like I'd just been preparing for that moment. That's what I wanted. And I was just excited to get to kind of just show them what I can do, you know? And I was just excited to do that.
Which is like, it's incredible. I mean, Caitlin, I think back when you were, because Diana, you got the role when you were 21.
Yeah.
When I was 21, I would have been a mess in a room with Steve Carell. That would have been terrifying. And even Steve said in episode one of this podcast. He was nervous the first day on set with John Malkovich.
Really? So
it's, yeah, it's great to hear that you have this poise.
I mean, I think it's more of like, you gotta fake it till you make it. Because after the audition, I was like in my car shaking and I was like, oh my God, I just did that. Like I did it. I held it together. I didn't freak out or faint or anything. That's really cool. Cause I think it was a month earlier, I had an audition with Amy Poehler. And oh, wow. That one, I was like actually like a shaking chihuahua the whole time.
What was that for?
For Moxie.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. And I was so nervous. So I think I got all the jitters out with her. And then I was like, all right, you can do this. It's okay. They're really cool people. They're not that scary.
I agree. And I think that it's easier actually when you're to audition with actual actors. For me, it's really, auditioning was always hard because I am playing so much off the other person and the energy is all weird. And it's just a person who's reading off a piece of paper and there's only one person there. And I have a theater background. I'd rather be up on a stage with hundreds of people watching. So for me, I was always like terrible in auditions. And then if I could just go straight to a chemistry read, I was so much better because I was like, there we go. Now we're acting. It just seems like a whole different animal.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And especially the theater background. It's really, the less people that are in the room, the more awkward, I think, and more nervous I get. When there's like 5-6 people, when it starts getting into the bigger rooms, you're like, oh, I can do this. Like this is, you don't pay attention anymore because you're so like tuned into the partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can read the room too, which is nice. Even as a stand-up, when you hear a little chuckle from Greg on the side, you're like, okay, I'm doing okay here,
right.
You know? Diana, you come from a theater background too, right? I read that you've been in theater camp since you were 12. And
yeah.
Of course, you went to NYU. And of course, you were a big-time model before you
I don't know if you'd say big-time. I dabbled.
Stella McCartney. Closing the show for Stella McCartney. Have me and you ever done that?
No.
I don't think so.
Not once. We should, though.
You guys should. I agree.
We should just get together and do it just you and me, you know?
Yeah,
let's do it.
We Zoom, do a Zoom fashion show. Just walk down your hallway.
I am in my closet.
There you go. We're almost there.
There's something so sad about a Zoom fashion show.
That's the future of fashion, Jimmy. Come on, get with it.
I'm ready. People have been pitching me, all my comedians buddies, like, hey, man, you want to do a Zoom stand-up show? I'm like, this sounds like the worst idea on the planet.
You can make your own laugh track.
Yeah.
Just play crickets.
Diana, so you have so much poise, you know, and you're young. You're much younger than us and even the rest of the cast. I'm considered one of the young guys on the cast, right?
Oh, that I'm 30s. A child, I guess.
Well, no. But you have such a poise about you. What was your process of crafting this Erin Nair character?
I don't know. I feel like when I get a new character, the first thing I think about is what would they listen to? Which is kind of because I feel like when I'm in a mood or a funk or any kind of place mentally, the first thing I turn to is music for myself. So I always like to just think about what would my character listen to. And I always make a playlist for the character I'm playing. So
And what's in the Erin playlist?
There's a lot of like Phoebe Bridgers and why am I blanking right now?
Stevie Nicks?
No, not too much of that. Mm. More like Radiohead and Phoebe Bridgers and like Bon Iver. I feel like she's in like a dark place, you know, and I think pre-Colorado she probably liked Maggie Rogers and like, I don't know, maybe she like listened to like John Mayer with her parents, you know?
right.
Yeah.
Maybe more basic stuff back in the day.
And maybe like the Eagles deeper. With her dad and stuff like that. So I think I think that was like my first step was just thinking of what Erin listens to. And then from there I thought about, you know, what would she wear and what does she think and how does she see the world? And obviously, at the end of the day, when you're doing a scene with anyone, it's like you're only as good as your partner. So I feel like I just kind of followed Steve and because he's like the best acting partner. So it was everyone on the show is really, really good and just made my job really easy.
Well, we haven't had any scene together. So you might want to reevaluate the statement after working with me, who is a horrific scene partner.
Yeah, I've heard some things.
I saw it firsthand. He's not lying.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I'm not good. Have not improved.
They had to give you the podcast.
this is my pity job, you know. Oh, this is my punishment, really. I have to do the podcast now. No, but I think what I love about Erin's character, and you did it so well, like you were saying, like her music choice probably changed. Her clothing changed from the first scene you saw her when she was in D.C. to towards the end of the episode when she's, you know, doing stuff that wouldn't make her family happy,
right.
You know. So did Greg tell you that this was the arc that we were tracking? How did you work on tracking that arc?
I don't know. I think a lot of it changed a lot. I mean, with every table read, it was like, you know, you're learning about your character more, basically. So I think I just tracked her through the show with every script I got, you know, because I can't predict her arc. I can't predict, you know, I'm not. I mean, today, you know, talking about arcs and stuff like that was great because it does give me more of an idea.
I love that, yeah.
But at the same time, especially for the first season, I think in this past season, it was just, I took it as it came at me, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think Dana Reed, actually, she sat down with me before episodes 9 and 10 to like really talk about like Erin's arc and what's happened in this season and where she came from and all that stuff. Like we really did like a proper character breakdown, which was really great. But for the most part, I feel like it wasn't like the main conversation when we were on set. It was more like, what are we doing right now?
Just like moment to moment.
Yeah, very, very moment to moment.
Yeah, and your moments with Steve are so great. One of my favorites, not to jump too far ahead, but in episode 9, that 40-second scene, that was absolutely heartbreaking. Because there's so many scenes with Erin that when I read, I'm like, oh, this is just like a bratty teenager. Like, I would have maybe just played it if I was to play this part. Just like a basic, you know, bratty teenager. But you added so much depth in that she is not just bratty, she's scared, you know, moving to Colorado by herself. I really loved that performance.
Oh, thank you. Jimmy.
Come on. And the pairings have been really fun in the first season for Erin. At first, you have the Yuri character played by Alex Sparrow, and then you have the Duncan character played by Spencer House, right?
Yes.
How was it working with those two?
It was great. Spencer's awesome. I think we had a lot of fun together on set, which, you know, episode 7, we get into some shenanigans, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was really fun. That was a fun day. That was actually a really fun day on set. We actually got to, like, talk a lot because we had, like, because he was very in and out himself. And since he doesn't live here, it wasn't like I could, like, hang out with him or anything like that because he lives in New York, I believe. But it was great. We had a really good time. And Alex Barrow is such a character. Like, he's got such a big personality.
I wish we have had Alex Sparrow on the podcast. I guess we didn't have a chance to talk to him. He is so interesting.
Yeah, he's very fascinating.
Because he is a pop star in Russia.
He's a Russian
pop star.
Caitlin,
did you know this?
No.
Yeah, Alex Sparrow, who played Yuri, he won the Russian version of Dancing with the Stars. Oh, that's so he told us, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you do any fact checking on that, or?
Well, he was so confident. I just kind of bought it.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the perfect salesman. I'm like, yeah, no, he was so perfect for the part.
Yeah,
like such a fantastic casting.
He has a, I don't know if it's a Russian thing where they don't, because, you know, if I say, Caitlin Olsen, you know, you're the best, Always Sunny, my favorite show, you're like, oh, thank you. They like a little humble, like, oh, come on, it's not, you know, whatever, right? But we were like, yeah, I would joke around with other people that come on set. I'm like, you know, this guy that plays Yuri, Alex Sparrow right here, he won Dancing with the Stars. He's basically the Beyonce of Russia. He's just a heartthrob, everything, right? Like kind of, you know, even joking.
He'd be like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yeah, no, that's true. He was like, yeah.
He's like, no, it's true. I am. And we're like,
cool.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool.
I don't know where the conversation goes after that, but cool, dude. You know?
Like, I what I would give to have that confidence.
I know. I know. And that corgi.
Oh my God. His dog is the cutest thing in the world.
A cute corgi and him shirtless. It's quite.
It's a great combo.
Yeah.
Like the perfect thirst trap.
Yes. There's a couple really funny scenes with you and Duncan. One of them is a fantasia, where you realize he doesn't have any imagination. We're trying to look that up. Is that a real thing?
Again, I have no idea. But when someone says something with confidence, I will believe it.
Yeah. And then at the end, when he became like a conspiracy theorist, talking about Jeffrey Epstein and the Queen of England, I thought that was so funny because of your reaction of it.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like a broadish character trait, but then you really grounded it at the end, just like sitting on
the
Froyo stand, like, wow.
We all know a guy, you know? We all know a guy who's on 4chan or Reddit.
Sadly.
Yeah.
Sadly, we do. Caitlin, the shirt scene, one of my favorites, the shirt app.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
The S-H-R-T.
Yeah.
That must have been so fun to do. Was it a green screen when you guys did that?
Yeah, it was. And then what was up there? There was something that was up there that was trying to like take the, it would just be a placeholder. But to let us know when the picture of him with the clothes popped up. But it was like him pantsless or something. It was so distracting that Steve, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was so funny.
And it was a Photoshop picture of Steve pantsless, I hope.
Something like that. And Steve was amazing. Like, can we take that? We had to take it down because it was too distracting because it was cracking us up. But everything was fun. The whole thing was, I just really love that man. He's such a good guy, and he
really is
so unbelievably talented and professional, and it was, the whole thing was really fun.
Yeah. And your sidekick in that episode, Hannah, who was played by Janina Gavankar. Yes. Is that how you say her name?
Janina, yeah.
Yeah, she is great, and her relationship with Ben was so fun.
That was so great.
Yeah.
Did you meet her before the shoot? Did you have a chemistry read with her at all or anything like that?
No, I met her the day she showed up.
Wow. Wow. And yeah, it seems like you guys have been working together forever, which is great.
No, she was wonderful, and she was really excited to be there too. And we were just all kind of joking around together. It was a really fun, easy shoot, you know? I mean, I kind of touched on this, but it's not always so fun to go and guest star on someone else's show, but everyone was really nice, and half my Sunny crew also, like, we shot season 14 and then my crew went straight over to Space Force, so like
hair and makeup department.
Abby, Thea, so that made it really nice too. We're just so hanging out in between scenes was just fun because everyone was so welcoming and nice and happy.
They really are. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to be there. Well, yeah. Happy to have me there. It was great.
And I think it really starts from the top of the call sheet. I mean, Diana, I think me and you both experienced this. You know, my first scene was with John and Carell. I was like, oh my God, like I'm like shaking, you know?
Yeah.
But they immediately make you feel so welcome. And they're like cool dudes, man. They're just cool.
They were so gracious.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. And that can be very intimidating. And I think that they know that. So they just really went out of their way to make me feel comfortable, and they were very complimentary. And, it was almost like I had to learn a new language. I mean, a lot of my stuff got chopped down for time, but there was so much dialogue, and it was all like Silicon Valley speak or, you know, space or fuel or science talk. Like, there was a lot that I was saying, and for a long period, there were big monologues. And they were just like staring at me listening. And it was just like, I would find myself like talking a little bit faster to just be done with it. And then I was like, stop it. This is whatever. But there was one day in particular, it was so long and it was kind of just all me talking. And by the end of the day, my brain was just completely fried. And I don't know, I forgot something. I was like, you guys, I'm sorry. My brain is mush. And both of them just took the opportunity to go out of their way to just be like, listen, what you have done this week is so, they just were really complimentary and they were lovely. Yeah. And that you don't have to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been fine to just say, no, it's okay. Don't worry about it or whatever. But they just both took me aside and just made me feel really comfortable and good. And I think that's sadly, I mean, that's really how it always should be, but that's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
John in the hair and we were both in makeup chairs, and he kept grabbing his script and running lines with me. He was like, let's do this scene, let's do it over again. I was just like, who is this man? Nobody has time for this. Because he would see me sitting there like going over it, and he'd just be like, here, I'll run with you, and just start doing it, and then be like, again. I was like, This man clearly directs a theater company and does not.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not your job to do this, but it was so sweet of you. And it really helped.
He's about his work.
He really is.
He's a great team leader, and so is Steve.
Yes.
With those technical terms, I feel I had to do a lot of that in this show too. And I don't have time to go like on NASA.gov and research it. So I just try to make it sound real. Do you have a process on that, Caitlin?
Well, I mean, fortunately, mine was only, I was there for the week. So I'm impressed with you because I'm not really able to do that. I have to understand what it is I'm saying or I won't be able to memorize.
you're impressed of how much of a hack I am.
I am, because you're pulling it off. You are. I think if I didn't know what I was saying, I would forget the lines. So I had to do a lot of research for that.
Wow, good for you. That's very method. Very, very great. That's awesome.
That's just survival, you know?
Diana, is this true that is this your first series regular role on a TV show?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
I know. How fun. So how has it been? Because, of course, people know you from Booksmart, Ma, great movies, great standout performances. How has it been different that now you got like a little TV family?
It's really cool to you see the same people so consistently. Like, I actually feel like, I don't know, with our Zoom calls, I just feel like we really are our own little team. And it's really nice and I don't know, it just feels like you're, because when you do a movie, it's like summer camp, you know, you build this little family, but at the same time, you know that summer's going to be over. And, you know, every time you see them, it's like, oh, those are my friends from summer camp. But it's not a constant, you know, like, you know, you're not going to see them every day. But I feel like, when you're on a TV show, at least what I've been feeling, it feels more like school, you know, or you see the same people and you know who you can talk to and you know, like, everyone knows each other. And it's like when you're like your junior of high school, like everyone just knows each other. And it's like you can talk to anyone and there's no drama and it's just really simple and easy. I mean, at least it felt like that on our set. It just felt like we were in a really good rhythm and it was just really nice. And I really, really love our whole crew, our whole cast, the whole production. Yeah. It's just really special.
No, I love that. And it's only season one. I'm sure we're still kind of working out the kinks, start building our relationships, you know. But I can't wait for season two and three when it's already kind of so close and understanding of what each other can bring to the table.
Yeah, and I just feel like because you're interacting with the same people, it's like you just start to learn everyone really well and like what they need or what they like in boundaries and all that stuff. I just feel like it's just the level of respect is different because you know what to expect of people. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And Caitlin, I mean, Always Sunny, it's on season 14, you said? Is that right?
Wow.
We will be doing season 15. We just got picked up.
That's amazing.
I remember when I was on in season 8, you guys were like, I don't know, season 9 might be the last one, right? And now it's season 15. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think one of the coolest things was even when I was on season 8, you guys have had the same crew.
Yeah.
For 8 seasons and the same crew probably now, right?
Yeah.
So season 15. So how does that feel as a family?
It really is something that is very special. And, you know, and I'm watching Glenn and Charlie's kids grow up as well. And like you said, the crew is pretty much all the same. We've had some changes, but for the most part, we're a family and we respect each other. And nobody's trying to get something that the other person doesn't get. And that's really honestly the truth. And I think it's just so important. Mm.
That's what our set feels like.
Yeah.
Like there is no ego. Like, it really feels like we're a team, we're a family. And
yeah, you're a machine.
Yeah. Like what Jimmy was saying, it starts with, you know, top of the call sheet. And I think because we got really lucky with two actors that are just so professional and respectful and like they seem to really care about the well-being of the show and everyone involved. And I think that's why it's really just like the easiest set to be on.
For sure. And on season, I mean, episode one of the episode of the podcast, Steve was saying that Greg really has a knack of hiring nice people and not assholes, you know, even actors and crew and everything. And I feel like that's a probably the key to longevity on a show. Same with The Office, Always Sunny, and hopefully this one. Maybe we'll do this for 10 more years. Who knows? You know, I'll be fired by season 3.
Stop. I'll get out of here.
You know, and
stop that right now.
We'll see.
Nonsense.
Well, okay. I always ask this to people I love on the show. Do you guys have any advice? I guess you guys, Caitlin, if I may say, you're the queen of comedy, really the king of comedy.
Oh. You
know, you're so great. And Diana, as the press has been saying, you are the next Julia Roberts.
Oh, stop. Yeah. Oh, God. This joke needs to end.
She hates that.
No, I don't know that I hate it. It's just... I'm like, I don't want to disrespect Miss Julia Roberts, you know?
I am sure Julia Roberts would be very stoked that people are saying that you're the next her, you know? That's a compliment for her as well.
That's way more a compliment to me.
So I guess, do you guys have any advice for young actors, actresses out there?
I mean, I touched on it a little bit earlier, but you've got to make it special to yourself. You just have to... You need to find something that you identify in that character and lean into it and embrace it and play around with it and do it for yourself. Don't do it because you think that's what a director or a casting director wants mm-hmm. to see. You've just got to make it your own, because the secret is nobody knows what they want. If you come into the room, and this is from the other side, from the casting side of it, somebody comes into a room and I think I have an idea about how I want this character and they blow me away, they've got the job and I just tweak the character and rewrite for it. So just come in and do a really great job. And the second before you walk into that room, just be like, I don't give a shit about these people. I want to impress myself. I want to make myself laugh. I want to be proud of myself. And I want to get back in the car and be like, that was fun. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Diana, especially with auditioning, it seems like you have no fear, you know, How do you do it?
I don't know. I think at the end of the day, I just go into the room knowing that I'm me, and what I bring is special and unique, and I just know that no one else can do that because no one else is me but myself. And mm-hmm. I think I think the best thing you can ever do is just be honest with yourself and don't compromise who you are, because that's not what this industry is about. You know, like, I think, we're actors, we're chameleons, we change all the time and whatever. But at the end of the day, I'm still, before they say, okay, action, like I'm me. And when I go home, I'm still me. And I think, it's just not worth compromising your morals or who you are for anything. Like, it's not, I don't think it would ever be worth it. And I think that's what I always take with me.
Also, especially right now, don't wait around for people to create things for you. Just create stuff for yourself. It doesn't have to be an entire television show or write a movie, but, you know.
Get on TikTok, man. That's the only way.
That's the only way you're going to make it in this business, is if you get on TikTok today.
Are you guys on TikTok? I'm on TikTok.
I'm not on TikTok.
I'm not on TikTok.
There's moments where I'm like, me? No, Diana, you're not going on TikTok.
Did you? Why not? You know, it's fun. Will Smith is on TikTok now, man.
I think because I have talked so much trash about TikTok, like, I'm not allowed on it now. Like, I have to, through this quarantine, come out of it knowing that I never went on TikTok. I practiced what I preached.
Yep.
It's all just about TikTok. I do every show thinking about TikTok in the back of my mind.
Ugh, is this hour up yet?
Okay, so we got a clip here. This is towards the end of the episode with Aaron and Duncan. After the whole shenanigans of spilling ice cream in Edison James's car, they get together and Duncan just have a couple theories of his own. Let's take a listen.
What have you been reading lately?
Excuse me?
Nothing. Just that that Denver airport sure is crazy, huh?
Duncan, have you've been reading to impress me?
No. But if I had, would you be impressed?
I very much might. So, that Denver airport.
I read it was $2 billion over budget.
Ooh, I was not aware.
Yeah. And many believe that the money was used to build underground meeting rooms for those who control the world economy. The Illuminati.
Wait. What are you reading?
Websites.
I love how you said Illuminati.
Yeah, it got me every time.
Did he say that every take?
Yeah, Illuminati is great. It was great.
And was all those things scripted? The Queen stuff and all that stuff?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't, I wish I had some fun anecdote about improv right now, but I truthfully can't remember anything about that day other than it was getting cold and I wanted my parka after every take.
Yeah, you guys all shot that. That was all outside of that Toyota Center in Torrance, right?
Yeah. And I remember during the walk and talk, this is not about that clip, and I'm really sorry, but whatever. But during the walk and talk, they were having like the rockets go off behind us. And so it was a lot of like resetting up these rockets. And I, because I'm 12 years old, kept getting excited by the rockets anyway. So I think the first two takes, like, Aaron was too excited about rockets because Diana was really excited about rockets. But because we kept resetting, also just because the rockets were a whole thing to figure out. It was just, it rained for a second, then it stopped raining and it was cold and my hands were getting all pale and white and creepy looking. But yeah, because that's always where my mind is. I'm like, what is my body temperature right now while we're filming?
Do you ever use those heating sacks that you can hold?
Yeah, those are great. I put them on my feet too. I mean, I'm that person that has like 8 heating packs. I would strap heating packs around my stomach and my back during the Lancaster stuff because it was so cold.
Yeah.
Which was the stuff from Lancaster?
All the am I allowed to say this? Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
The prison stuff, the desert stuff, the episode 9 and 10, the biking. Oof, that was cold and windy. It was a lot of like anytime I was outside other than the Toyota Center, it was probably like 50 degrees.
Yeah, and how many miles did you end up jogging? That's one thing I didn't realize as an actor. How many takes?
I
never
jog.
Volunteer to run ever again after I shot this one movie because I was just exhausted.
I think, I don't know. I was like, at that point, I was so excited to be moving to get my heart rate up so I could start getting warm. But I was like, I'll run as much as you guys need me to. I need to get warm. I'm freezing cold. It's like 30 degrees and it's 5 o'clock in Lancaster.
Yeah. And that ice cream scene in the car, that flip of the ice cream, that reset must have been a nightmare.
Well, the funny thing is I wasn't being messy enough, which in turn made props have to clean up more because I couldn't quite like destroy the car as much as Jeff wanted me to. I think it took us like 17 takes to get the perfect ice cream landing. And I felt so bad because it's such a nice car and I hated making it so dirty and like I felt so bad. And because we needed to be like a certain amount of liquidy, I was like probably annoyingly hands-on about the ice cream. Because once we'd figured out like what kind of the exact consistency of like what it needs to be for it to spill the right way, I was like, I have it down to a science. You don't understand. Like, I can do this. So I was like insistent on like making the ice cream cone each time. That was just me being kind of like neurotic though.
And that was a legit like Maybach, right? Maybach?
The car. I don't know.
I don't know what the car was. I don't know what a Maybach is. It's a Mercedes.
Yeah, I think a Maybach is exactly a nice Mercedes.
Oh,
then it's like
yes.
The Lexus for Toyotas, sure. But like the Maybach for. Okay, never mind. We cut that part out, guys. We're not a bunch of car enthusiasts here.
You don't have to cut that out.
This is actually a Mercedes commercial.
That makes us look cool because we don't care about cars.
Oh
yeah,
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
What? What's luxury?
Nissan Leaf? Nah, I only know about electric cars. Now, Diana, since you did that 17 times with the ice cream spilling and a prop master have to clean it up every time, this is a great opportunity to bring up our prop master, Scott McGinnis, and you can personally apologize to him.
Oh, great. Finally.
How's it going?
Hi.
Hey, Scott. What's up, man? So Diana was just talking about the ice cream scene.
Yes.
That must be, that's tough for a prop person, right?
Well, you know what? That we spent way too much time kind of, you know, rehearsing that, you know, testing it before you had to do it just to see, see how we could do it. And it got to a point where I wasn't sure whether my crew just wanted to make soft serve ice cream and eat it because they kept trying it with different flavors and to see what would work better. And we, quite honestly, though, I got to say, Diana, we never did one as well as yours. Like the one, when I watched it, nice. I don't know whether they enhanced it or what, but we did it so many times and it was never as good as the way that you did it.
You're so kind.
You did it kind of perfectly. So it almost looked like, I thought, wow, did they enhance that? Because it was like the best ice cream spill I've ever seen. Not like I've seen a lot of them, but you know, there was all this discussion behind the scenes because they didn't really want to do that in a rented car, you know, because it was such an expensive car.
Was it a Maybach, so, Scott?
Yeah.
Yes. See? Okay. Nice I'm not work. An idiot. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So they weren't, you know, at first they didn't want us to do it at all. And so we, you know, we were standing by with all the cleaners.
Yeah.
I wondered whether they even told the company that we rented it from that we were going to do that to their $200,000 car.
Oh. See, when someone told me the price of the car, I was like, I can't spill ice cream on this.
Yeah.
That goes against all of my mother's morals. Like, I can't do that. That's so against the rules.
So when that poor company who rented the car to us is watching or listening to this, they're gonna realize that, you know, that's what that smell is. They can't get out of their car.
Yeah.
Well, now the cat is out in the bag. We're going to own a Maybach by season two, which is fine.
Yeah. Pretty good. We'll have to write it into the script.
Yeah.
I love talking to the crews on the show because there's so much detail that's put into everything. We were talking to Susan Mangini, Mancini, our wonderful production designer. And you probably work pretty closely with her, right?
Especially, definitely.
Like the War Game episode. There's so much there with props, the exoskeleton, the guns, the balloons on Tony and everyone. I thought that was so freaking funny. So how does all that come about? Do you work closely with Greg and then Susie? And how accurate are those things, guns and such?
Well, the exoskeletons were based on something real. You know, that's and Greg had let me know. A few months beforehand, he said, "Hey, we're going to do this thing with exoskeletons." So I started researching them, tried to figure out how I could remake them, you know, in some way that without using the real thing. But you know, the vests when they're wearing that have all the balloons all over them.
Yes,
I had something completely different in mind, and I went with like a really high tech version with these you know synthetic balloons, and I thought it looked really interesting. And then, like with everything with the show, just trying to get inside Greg's head. You know, to see how far you can go with the humor, how real it's supposed to be. He did this drawing that was so funny because it was literally a stick figure with these little circles all around it.
That's amazing.
And he said, "No, this is what I was thinking." And it was literally people with balloons all over them. And then, so I did that and tried to make it look like, you know, something maybe Space Force would do if that's all they had. And then, you know, we thought, well, how are the, you know, because they're BB guns, you know, that they're using. And so we, you know, we did a little test. I set one up and we were going to, I said, well, they'll pop easily. A BB gun will, you know, one of the special effects guys even got involved and said, yeah, BB gun will definitely pop one of these things. But Greg really wanted to shoot the BB gun. He kept saying, "Can't we just shoot the BB gun?" And after about 15 minutes of it, we finally just set up a little test and said, "Okay, Greg, we can shoot the BB gun." Because it was like that little kid side of him came through. And I think in situations like that, where it's a war game, when Greg's really sweet nature comes through like that, where it's he goes back to being a kid with a BB gun, it made it less, it was completely different than what I imagined it, because I hadn't thought about it right at first, but it made it so non-lethal and non-scary and just fun, you know, where, and more, which is, you know, what he had in mind. And in so many cases in this, where it just becomes something that's inside of Greg's head that I'm trying to figure out what it is, because he's got such great instincts for how far to go, and you know.
And with everything from set design to props, it really adds just layers of comedy. Mm-hmm. I thought the Tony white balloon, because everybody else's balloon was like black. And then Tony getting just
press.
Lit up with the white press balloon was so great. That was really fun.
Yeah, that was fun. And then, Caitlin, also for your character too, because you know, because it's based on a real character, I wasn't sure, do we go head on with just the real character?
Neither was anybody. It was really funny because, and I was totally fine with it, but you know, there was such miscommunication. Like I came in for the photo shoot before the front of the magazine and like I got completely Elizabeth Holmed up and then they were like, oh no. It's just like a hint. And like, I was like, am I doing the voice? I can, I don't know what I'm like, what are we, it was just like, they were all over the place. We finally settled on something. People were asking me, you know, you remember, but like department heads were asking me like, okay, well, are we doing like an Elizabeth Holmes or are you? And I was like, I'm just here for a week, guys. I am not the person to talk to. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. But I get it. I mean, that's just part of the process, especially in the, in a newer show.
Well, and also because it's based on a real thing that a space in the Space Force is real, but we don't know what that really is yet.
Yeah.
You know, so we're kind of making it up. And in fact, there was this this thing I read in Wired magazine in the last couple of days. And it was something, it got my attention because it said Space Force, you know, coming out with this new rocket. And I didn't know if it was when I first saw it, I didn't know whether it was something, a promo for the show. But it turns out it was a real thing. And they have this new high-speed rocket, but I'm not kidding. They're calling it the Super Duper Rocket.
Oh, my God.
And I thought Super Duper. It was Super Duper Rocket. I thought if we did that on the show, people would think we were just being lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know? It's so funny. Like the jokes in real Space Force is broader than the jokes in the show. Like the flag reveal, when they reveal the flag and it looks like a little art project in the real Space Force. And we're like, if we would have presented that flag to Greg, he would have shut it down. He'd be like, no, that doesn't look realistic.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, dummies.
Well, one of the things about that rocket, though, that kind of played into the character, the Edison James character, was that they said the reason why they were trying to develop a different fuel for it. And so I thought, wow, we actually, that's already something that we kind of were playing around with.
Yeah.
You know, which is what your fuel is, skinny fuel.
Just rosé colored.
I love that. I love that. And we're ahead of the real world, which is kind of cool about the show.
Well, when Caitlin, when you're spraying the skinny fuel on there is your example. I thought, once again, I really thought it was supposed to be some high-tech Space Force thing. So I designed something that you could tell that you'd started with a real barbecue, but it looked like a jet engine coming off the top of it. And maybe you'd put it in there and it would shoot a flame out the top. And I had this whole contraption that I'd drawn up and sent to Greg. And he said, no, I think it's just a barbecue.
You do a great Greg Daniels impression. That's awesome. So was that CGI flame the King's? Okay, cool. Because I was wondering, what did you put
in? Yeah, well, because I had designed it tall, just taller than, like, just over 6 feet tall where the flame would come out of. So you could actually do it, and we could do a real flame, and it would still be safe, and, you know, thought all that through. And once again, it was just overthinking, because that wasn't where the comedy was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? But that's so fun. You got to have one of the most fun jobs, like going to prop houses and also MacGyvering your own props.
Yeah. That is the fun part, is making this up. Because I've done a lot of science fiction, but then also a lot of comedy. Mm-hmm. And this was a perfect kind of mix of both, where, because it's a lot more fun.
It's great. And I think we all agree when we say you did a wonderful job, Scott.
Yeah, the props are incredible on this show.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, it was so fun. My glasses also.
Your glasses.
That was one thing. I never understood this, why glasses is part of prop department and your clothes are the wardrobe department. There's a lot of, I don't know what's going on there. They need to just synchronize that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And And yeah, this was our one little point of conflict on the show, wasn't it? Because for some reason, when I sent them out, they took forever to get back because they had your prescription in them.
I'm blind without my glasses. So the first three episodes, I think I was wearing glasses with no prescription in them, and I was completely acting blind. But you know what? In hindsight, that actually was kind of okay. I felt like I was seeing a different world, playing a different character because of my eyesight. And then when my eyesight sharpened up, I became a worse actor, I think.
Well, and they cut around the things where you ran into the time when you knocked the bench over.
Yeah, good thing that Dr. Chan's not an action hero. You know, I don't have to do any crazy things where it does require precision eyesight. Exactly.
Yeah, but because it's Greg, each of the characters has the funny little things that you kind of discover along the way. Like whenever your character was eating, there was always something that you had done very meticulously.
Oh, I love that. The very OCD, you know? The French fries in this episode and the cheesecakes. Yeah. I felt bad for you guys having to keep resetting. And we only had so many pieces of cheesecake.
Yeah. It's actually, there were quite a few, but then it kept, after several takes, it, we had to destroy a lot to get those perfect little squares.
I remember Brandon had to reconstruct the cheesecake by putting cream and everything on it again because I cut into too many pieces.
Yeah.
That's great. I love all those details. Yeah.
Yeah. Most of my set guys hate food scenes for that very reason.
Yeah, I agree. Well, go tell that to Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always eating food. And you know what? All my references.
I got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You didn't laugh for him. You could have saved that whole thing.
Yeah, you really left me hanging there,
man. I'm sorry.
A smile does not come through in a podcast,
well,
Diana.
Dear podcast listeners, I understood Jimmy's joke. I think he's very funny. You should watch his comedy special on Amazon.
Yeah.
And with that, thank you guys very much. No, you guys are awesome. What a great episode. Thank you for coming on. Scott, Caitlin, and Diana. Love you guys.
Love you, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you.
Later, guys. This has been Inside Jokes Space Force. I'm your host, Jimmy O. Yang. Join us again for even more Space Force right here on the podcast.